Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Mark Schreiber and Diane Gillespie. Hello, Mark and Diane.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Diane is the executive director of the Jefferson City Convention and Visitors Bureau, and Mark is a board member on the Convention and Visitors Bureau. We came in today to talk just a little bit about the Missouri State Penitentiary, beautiful landmark here in the capital city, and it has quite a history behind it. So it was a functioning state pen at one point, and Mark, who actually worked at the pen as a corrections officer, why don't you give us a little bit of the history behind MSP?
Well, I actually was the last deputy warden to serve there and started out there in 1968 as a corrections officer. I was going to college, and the history of the prison is when we closed it September the 15th of 2004, it was the oldest continuously operating maximum security prison west of the Mississippi River. The prison actually started in 1836 is actually when it opened, and it actually opened the very week that the Alamo battle was going on in Texas, and Andrew Jackson was in his second term as President of the United States.
Wow.
And ironically, my wife's third great grandfather, a fellow named James Dunica, who was in one of the first 30 families to settle Jefferson City, he actually built the first building there after he built the first capitol in Jefferson City,
Wow. The
first permanent capitol. So the prison had a really long, long history, and it continued to grow over the years through the Civil War years. And you can look at some of the information that exists on prison population, and you could see that how particularly during wartime, the Civil War, the population dropped somewhat, and then after the Civil War, then it went back up because you had all these soldiers coming back, and a lot of them had no jobs and nothing to do or whatever.
Right.
So it actually had a very long history, and it actually at one time was one of the largest prisons in the United States.
Hmm.
So until 1989, when the Potosi Correctional Center opened in Mineral Point, it was the only maximum security prison in the state of Missouri that was run by the state. So, you know, of course, we had the notorious riot of 1954, which wasn't the only major disturbance they had here, but probably the one that got the most publicity and press. At that time, it was recommended that the prison be closed after the commission looked at the prison. And kind of ironic, because I remember the riot. We had just moved here from Springfield, Missouri, and I was in the third grade. And I remember the riot very well. So I went from the third grade till the time that I was the deputy warden before it was closed.
Mm.
So, you know, it had that history behind it. And of course, there were a lot of good things that happened there, but there were also some very negative things that happened there simply because it was terribly overcrowded.
Yeah.
And it became very antiquated.
Yeah. Well, when we talk about the prison grounds is actually quite large.
Yes. The whole complex, and of course, a lot of the complex was actually outside the wall.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the complex was over 30-some acres. And it was quite large. And at one time, they had about 50 buildings there. And it was in continuous progression where something would be torn down and then something was added and so on and so forth. And of course, it had the male inmates there. And then also, for a period of time, there were female inmates there. And they remained at the prison in what's known as Housing Unit 1 until 1926, when Warden Leslie Rudolph moved the women over to the location that became known as Farm Number 1, and that's where the DNR headquarters is located at the present time. And they remained there until 1960, and then they moved them up to Tipton. Of course, we've got other female prisons in Missouri now as well.
Sure. So in 2004, when it was decommissioned, the staff, the inmates basically just left the buildings as they are.
They did. Everything's in the planning, as you well know, on anything, when you moved here or whatever's done. And we'd been planning for some period of time and even put out information making people think that particularly the inmate population has kind of thrown them off guard as to when we were going to move, because we were very concerned about somebody wanting to escape from the prison to get the notoriety of being the last people or person to escape from MSP.
Sure.
So our staff, all the staff, not just the custody staff, but the caseworkers, the medical staff, food service, all those folks work really, really hard. And it actually took over 5,000 boxes just to move the inmate property.
Wow.
So we coordinated with other law enforcement agencies here. And we really did something quite remarkable, because normally you build a new prison and you train your staff, and then you have offenders that you get from outside or whatever. Well, we actually moved the entire prison population in 13 hours and moved it from the old prison to the new prison. I remember when we had the count that evening and the count came up wrong. And I said, my goodness, how far off are we? And they said, well, we're 21 off. I said, well, that's good, because I knew that was not possible. If they'd have said one or two, I'd have really gotten worried. So
sure.
I said, go back, take your time. They did it about three or four times, because the new facility was new to the staff. And so then we got a good count, and we knew that everything was secure and that everybody was accounted for.
There we go.
Yeah.
You know, having just done a move ourselves here from our old building to this new building, I can't imagine a 13-hour move. So, wow. When that decommissioning happened, at that point, then discussions really started about what to do with the site. So what's some of the history of that?
Well, I know that, you know, first of all, on that, Mr. Castor, our staff, they definitely wanted their own families to have the opportunity to go through the prison. And that had never really happened before, because it just wasn't allowed. So we decided to actually set up some dates where we could have the staff come in with their families and tour the prison. We set that up. And then we found out that the public was really interested in seeing what the prison was like.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up some dates for that. And we actually had a little training session for the staff, the people that wanted to participate. Not everybody wanted to. Some people just aren't comfortable talking to others. But there were enough that wanted to that we actually set them at various significant points throughout the prison. And we allowed people from the outside, the public, to come in. And when we did that, we had, for one weekend, we had close to 10,000 people.
Wow.
They went all the way from down at what State Street, where the admin building was, all the way down Lafayette Street, and then around the corner onto Capitol Avenue, and they just kept coming and coming and coming. So I actually had staff there with counters to count the people, and they counted close to 10,000 people that went through the prison.
Yeah.
So then we decided that the state of Missouri, since they actually still owned the property, they put together the MSP Redevelopment Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And that commission was set up that the governor would appoint the chair, and then the governor would appoint three members. The county commission would appoint three members, and the city of Jefferson would appoint three members. First two from the city that were appointed were myself and John Lanware.
Okay.
And so then we met at the Office of Administration with Facilities Management, and Randy Allen was at Facilities Management at the time.
Okay.
He was the head of that. Charlie Bukowski was very involved. He was an architect, very interested in the history of the prison. And so we got together, and finally it was determined after several meetings that we needed to have a little charrette set up. So we had an architectural charrette established, and there were architects that were invited from all over everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was done in the Truman Building. And we had various people from the community, from all segments of the community, business people, regular citizens that were interested, and others. And we broke these people down into various groups. We had this charrette that went on for two or three days.
Mm-hmm.
And they got together and they came up with various plans as to what they thought could happen at the Missouri State Penitentiary. And it was really quite enlightening with the ideas that they came up with.
Yeah. What were some of the ideas?
Well, it was a combination of things. Obviously, one of the first things was the fact that it was very historical, and it should not be bulldozed. And everybody agreed on that. But they also realized that it was also a very valuable property. So the decision was made by that commission in their planning that it would be a combination of both public sector being involved from the standpoint of possibly business, businesses going in there, that you would have the historical component of the most historic buildings. The whole place is historic, but you couldn't just mothball everything over.
Right.
And then also then to have, of course, a possibility of some state government development there as well. So it was all those various components that they came up with, and they had everything from tourist entities and then also sports complex type things, the walking trails. Everybody felt that it was very important that we maintained a connection to the Missouri River.
Yes.
That was important. And of course, that was important as well in the early development of MSP, because they even had their own little river boat at one time.
Yeah.
Years ago, and they would cut wood and take it as far away as Roachport, and they did a lot of things. So it was dependent upon the river. And of course, at the time of the Civil War, in July of 1861, the steamboat Iatan landed at the prison steamboat landing, and the Union troops actually disembarked from there and marched into the prison and took over some of the shops. So prison was involved in that. And, you know, as you well know, there were probably more Union troops here at one time than there actually were citizens.
Right, right.
So all those components fit into the overall thought process.
And, yeah.
You know, people realize that the prison, when it was built on the outskirts of the city of Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And then the town grew around the prison.
Right.
And, you know, the same thing's probably going to happen someday with the JCCC out there.
Right, right.
But they felt that the historic component, they didn't really look at an industrial component, but they looked at a state government component. We had talked about for some time when I was with the Department of Corrections at Central Office, and I was there for about 15 years. We had talked about someday putting the corrections headquarters on that site.
Mm.
And at the time it was an active prison, it's prohibited under the state statutes for Missouri Correctional Headquarters to go on the site of an active prison. And
gotcha.
You can understand why that,
oh, absolutely.
That makes sense. And that was under Chapter 217, the Missouri Revised Statutes. So the thought was possibly doing that and a lot of other things that probably evolved out on the site. So
yeah.
You can kind of say the sky was the limit. They thought the architectural factor, they thought it was important that any new architecture that it blend in with the existing facility.
Uh-huh.
The possibility that you might even remodel some of the buildings on the inside and keep the exterior facade.
Yeah.
All of those things were considered. They thought that the landscape component was important as well.
Okay.
And they definitely felt that even though we had part of the wall that collapsed in 2002, they felt it was important that a good portion of the wall be kept because they said, after all, it was a prison.
Yes.
And so that was important as well.
Yeah. So how long did the commission meet?
Well, I can't give you the exact time frame, but we met for several years.
Yeah.
We did meet for several years. And then it got to a point where there was difficulty in finding people that would to be replaced.
Yeah.
Not so much from the city and the county, but some... there was some hesitation on the part of previous administrations.
Yeah.
And so then that became an issue. And really, there were statutes at the time that actually, I think it was 217-900, 217-900 through 217-910, which would be the correction statutes. And those were the statutes that gave the authority to the Redevelopment Commission.
Yeah.
And the Redevelopment Commission had quite a bit of authority. But the problem was we didn't actually have any operational components that allowed us to really move forward and do anything.
Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Okay. So it kind of ceased operating. And during that time, though, Convention and Visitors Bureau really stepped into that role. I'm assuming taking a note from the tour from the local citizens, and CVB really stepped in to start offering more regular tours. Diane, share a little bit about how that came about.
Well, that was before I started with the Convention Visitor, but it's my understanding, Mark, please speak up here, is that Steve Picker was the executive director of the Convention Visitors Bureau and saw an opportunity for the tours. And I was told that he was over at OA, Office of Administration, about once a month asking to do the tours. My understanding that they finally gave permission in 2009, thinking, mm-hmm. okay, we'll let them do it for a few months in 2009. And Mark assisted with writing the script for tour guides and bring the tour guides on. And that was the first year of tours with 3,000 people.
Nice.
And then after that, they saw, wow, 3,000 people. And it was a very short window of time in 2009, my understanding is. And so then OA said, okay, go ahead and go for 2010. And that kind of was the beginning of the tour. So They worked with OA on a one-year commitment at a time. So come the end of that each year, they'd have to go back to OA to ask for, can we go again next year?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's difficulty in marketing.
Oh, yeah.
And buying of advertising and getting motor coach groups and school groups that want to go the following year is to be able to say, well, we can put you on the schedule, but we're not sure we're going to have tours next
right,
year. You know?
Right.
So anyway, then in 2013, when we were closed down due to environmental issues over there and working with the state, we were able to get the long-term commitment MOU
yeah.
from the state to continue with the tours.
So what kind of numbers and revenue do we see coming out of those annual tours?
Well, right now for 2023, we had just under 30,000 people come in.
Wow.
And a total generated revenue was $880,000 and $88,962 on about a 3.5 economic attendee expenditure.
Yeah.
So it has a tremendous impact on our community and our state. I've been told that with MSP that we found that people were coming into Jefferson City and going to the Capitol and our other historic sites and MSP, and then they were spending the night.
Mm.
And I really saw that when in 2013 we got closed down, that all the hotels started calling saying, what's happening? We've got people calling and canceling reservations. So I think that was kind of the wake-up call to the hotel industry in town to say, MSP is making an impact on bringing visitors into our city.
Yeah. Well, these are international visitors as well as
Absolutely.
National visitors.
Absolutely. Yes.
So for someone who's taking a tour, what do they encounter?
You want to share what the tour kind of consists
sure.
of? Or?
Well, I don't get involved myself in the paranormal aspect. I always said that I dealt with abnormal, not paranormal.
Fair enough.
I didn't help cover that.
But yeah. But, and basically, it was decided at the beginning that the most of the emphasis should be placed on the historical
Absolutely.
Aspect of MSP.
Mm-hmm.
MSP is not meant to be, and the tour guides, we really emphasize when we train the tour guides, we don't want it to be a carnival-type atmosphere at all.
Right.
It's a very serious sociological, historical component.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that has to be kept that way, and I would be very disappointed if we didn't keep it that way.
Right.
So when we actually do tours, you know, we of course bring the people into the main building there, the one across from the federal courthouse, housing unit number one, and they're there in the lobby, and we introduce them to, of course, who the tour guides actually are and why we got started on the tours. And then the tour guides basically give them the same information that I just gave you.
Mm-hmm.
How the prison started and so on and so forth, the architectural aspects of the building that they just entered, being actually a revival type architecture, and who the architects were and when it was built. And so then there's some information on the wall, kind of a map, if you will, that show all the buildings that still exist, and they point that out. And then they go on from there onto the upper lawn there. And they talk about the upper lawn and the buildings that exist there, the buildings they were going into. And then we proceed on down to the housing unit four,
mm-hmm.
which was called A Hall originally. And it's the oldest building still there, having opened in 1868.
Okay.
And they're told that, you know, that the warden Swift was actually the architect, and Swift Highway in Jefferson City is named for him.
Wow.
That's where his home actually stood. And then they're taken into that building and they're seated in there. And the tour guides then go into quite a bit of information about the various periods of development as far as correctional development, the eras of correctional development,
mm-hmm.
the Auburn system, the Pennsylvania system, how Missouri prison embraced those systems, right or wrong, how they were embraced. Talk about some of the concept of the architectural concepts of housing for what they would be seeing. Of course, they point out a couple of cells. One is one of the original cells that has a door that's even too short for me. So then they're told about housing unit four. We point out, of course, Sonny Liston's cell, mm-hmm. tell a little bit about him and some other people that were there, like General John McDonald, who served in President Grant's administration, and some of those historical figures, because they actually did time in that particular building.
Yeah.
So then after we leave housing, well, first we go down into the, what's more called the basically the dungeon cells.
Oh, yeah.
Really what they were and housing units were and how horrific that was. Talk about a fellow named Firebug Johnson, who did a lot of time down there, who got out of prison and in 1903 collaborated with a former employee and actually wrote a book called Buried Alive, 18 Years in Missouri State Penitentiary.
Mm.
And he talks about, he obviously embellishes his own life story, which one would expect.
Oh, sure.
But nonetheless, if you go back and look at the, and this is why it's so important to have the early newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
And in the three books that I've written on MSP, I've used the Ellis Library a great deal because they had one of the finest newspaper archives in the United States over there. And that's where I learned that I needed glasses. Reading microfilm.
Sure.
And I found in the newspaper articles where Firebug Johnson had set fire to the Sullivan Saddle Tree factory and caused a very bad disturbance in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Got the Jefferson City population really stirred up. That's why he ended up in the dungeon cells.
So
having those newspaper archives were so valuable in finding out a lot of that early information about the prisoner, that would have been lost.
Yeah.
Because we had very few actual records. I can tell you back when I was just a CO and had no authority back then, so many things just got thrown away. And it's tragic that it wasn't kept and sent to the archive because they just write in a big ledger.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't write about a disturbance or they wouldn't write about, anything like that.
Sure.
So like we do today.
Yeah.
So then after we finish in four, we go to housing unit three and we talk about how there's a difference architecturally between four and three, how things we start to be more concerned about conditions of confinement and human condition standards, which nobody worried about early on.
Right.
But then they started worrying about things like consumption and typhoid and smallpox and fresh air and more light and better sanitation. And so then from there, we take them down at the go through those housing units, and we go on down to the and end the tour down at the gas chamber on the lower yard. And we talk about, well, why the gas chamber is where it is, standalone, what the industrial complex consisted of. And we talk throughout the tour about the industry and how the prison connection to Capitol Avenue.
Yeah.
The big homes on Capitol Avenue, that those homes came about for the most part because not only of prison labor, but because of people that owned the shoe factories and the saddle tree factory and the clothing factories, how those people made their fortune inside the Missouri State Penitentiary using inmate labor. And even, just like right now, one of the really great things is the fact that the International Shoe Factory is being saved.
Yes.
That's a wonderful thing.
Yep.
And the International Shoe Factory was there in the first place because after federal legislation basically did away with the use of inmate labor for private enterprise and prison-made goods could not be sold on the open market.
Yeah.
Well, then the people that you had that were your civilian employees that walked through the gates every day, they were hired. And that's how International remained in Jefferson City. That's how the Tweedy Footwear Corporation came about. Mr. Tweedy actually had worked in the prison as a foreman, and all those things came about. So that's all we try to show the connection between the capital city, our city, and the development of our city. And I will tell you this, that to this day, there are many people in our city that have lived there all their lives that still don't realize that.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, well, yeah, I can always go to the Capitol anytime I want, but no, I've never been there.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, I might get hit by a bus crossing the street too. You know?
Sure.
So,
sure.
You know, so we really try to bring that forward. We always encourage the people on the tours to ask questions, but we don't want to just focus on the negative.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of positive. And one thing that Diane might know as well, I'm sure she does, we've had quite a few former offenders that have come on our tours.
Yeah.
They want to see the prison saved.
Yeah.
They felt like they had some ownership there. But I mean, well, yeah, I worked for the plumbing crew, or I worked for the electrical crew, or I worked in food service, or I was on the painting crew. And that paint right there, I put on that wall.
Wow.
And that's impactful.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, the other piece to that is that so many of our tour guides did work there.
Yep.
So they're able to share the history, but then they also have their own personal stories.
Yeah.
And so somebody could come on a tour that Mark does and then turn around and come on a tour that Larry does and hear the history, but also hear some of his personal stories.
Right.
So, you know, we know that there's some way that we've got to capture those stories. So Mike Lear, who is one of our tour guides, has offered to help us, and he has been recording their stories so that we have that for the future tour guides.
Great.
To be able to continue to share that history. We've got to have it. And that's one of the things that Mark said, that, you know, when the prison was open, nobody was capturing any of the history. And, you know, who would have thought that they worked there and then all of a sudden it becomes a historic site for tours.
Right.
So we want to capture that history to be able to continue to share it.
Yeah. Well, so we've established the historical importance of that site, but time has not been kind to the site. 20 years later, the ravages of weather, tornado, took a little swipe at it. It's taken its toll on the buildings. So what are their current conditions?
I think that that's one thing that it really bothers me, because first of all, I guess I'm the last deputy warden alive. The other fellow, Mr. Wood, just passed away within the last month. And he was a deputy warden there as well with me. And you realize when you get a little bit older, like I have, that, you know, that I'm not going to be around forever. And so I would like to see something positive come out of the prison. And so to answer your question directly, the place definitely is deteriorating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can realize that you can't just shrink wrap everything and leave it. I mean, when you don't have the utilities and you don't have the humidity control, and we do live in a hostile environment.
Yeah.
We really do, from summer to winter. We know how that is. So, you know, one of the things that certainly needs to be done, and Diane and I are both on the same page here, is to button those buildings up
mm-hmm.
so that we can keep the rain and the snow. And that was one thing why it was so critical in the role that the Convention and Visitors Bureau actually played in getting the roof back on housing unit 4. Had that not been done in a timely fashion, and it wasn't even done fast enough as far as we're concerned.
Right.
But had we gone on and not done that for another year or so, we would not be taking a tour of housing unit 4.
Yeah.
It would have been gone. Just to give you an example, back in one of the books that I wrote, I had some pictures that a Jefferson City fire chief, when I was a little kid, family gave me. And when Chief Sullivan was chief back in the 1920s, the roof burned off of A Hall.
Mm.
One of the old little coal stoves, the flue caught the roof on fire.
Yeah.
The inmates had to sleep outside the building for a couple of nights in very extreme conditions because they had no place to put them. Well, they got that roof put back on, and I've got pictures of them putting the roof on. They got the roof put back on in about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Well, it took us months to get the roof put back on. Hey, hell, by the time you go through the bid process and everything that you have to go through.
Sure.
So you cannot let these buildings continue to deteriorate. Now, the tornado did a number on some of the buildings. Of course, A-Hall's been saved.
Yeah.
Housing Unit 2, as you know, is due to come down here in the next few weeks. And that building was definitely structurally compromised.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that makes me shudder every time I drive by there, I think, my goodness, if that would have still been an occupied prison, when we had the tornado, we would have fatalities.
Yeah.
Because all that glass blew into those open front cells. Part of the roof was gone. It took some of the steel from the windows, the actual frames out of the building, and that would have been an absolute mess.
Yeah.
Not to mention the towers that were damaged when those officers, when there was a tornado warning, those officers never came off the tower.
Right.
They had to stay on the towers. So the condition of the building is not good. And it can be compared to some of the other prisons around the United States that are historical, some prisons back east that are older than ours. Of course, that's east side of the Mississippi, not the western side. But certainly, you have to kind of pick and choose your battles.
Yeah.
So some of the, and you've got to have enough left so that people understand what was really there.
Sure.
You know, and I think that from that standpoint, Housing Unit 4 being the oldest, Housing Unit 1 being the next oldest, Housing Unit 3 being the next oldest, and then one from the WPA, the Roosevelt era, which was Housing Unit 2, that's going to come down, and Housing Unit 5, which is the building that's closest to the Missouri River, down there on the riverside. That building, I think, in my, this is my opinion now, nobody else's.
Yeah.
In my opinion, that building should be saved, because then you have these various eras of correctional development. And the latest housing unit was built in the 1930s. So you've got 1860s, early 1900s, circa 1904, 1906, 1913 to 1918, and then you've got 1937, 38, 39 in Housing Unit 5.
Yeah.
So those, to me, are the buildings that we should definitely put some emphasis on to save.
And that emphasis would be putting windows in, repairing roofs, for the most part?
Yeah. First thing you've got to do is button them up. Keep the water out and the animals out.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things.
Do we have an idea of what kind of investment that's going to take to do that?
I'll tell you, it'll take millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's the thing. If that is totally lost, and it's not saved, then what do we have to show anybody when they come on a tour?
Yeah.
What do we have to use as a sociological, historical, phenology classroom, you know?
Yeah.
One of the things that I did as an adjunct professor at Columbia College in criminal justice, I would take my students through the old MSP. This was in a master's program.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would take them to the new prison when it opened. And then I'd have them write a paper with a comparison.
Sure.
Based on what they learned about areas of correction development, what they saw, so on and so forth. Because a lot of those people would later become jail managers, prison administrators, so on and so forth. And so that's basically a living classroom that they can see.
Yeah.
And I think that's important.
Yeah. One of the things that was interesting in this last legislative session, the discussion about the future of MSP, beyond just the preservation of the buildings, right? But even just what the state's, the legislator's vision of that site should be. I think you kind of touched on a little bit about earlier when you were talking about it's more of a museum type setting as opposed to, and I don't mean to demean Silver Dollar City, as opposed to a theme park or whatever.
Correct.
And so I guess my question to both of you would be, what do you envision, what's a realistic vision for the redevelopment of that site?
The use agreement that we currently have with the state was that any of the net profits that we make off the tours go back into the preservation of MSP.
Mm-hmm.
And as of the 2013, we're at about $850 million that we have invested into that site.
Mm.
And how we did that in the past was, we would go to OA and say, what do we need to do here? Or we would take a project to him and said, this is what we think. You know, we did the centennial cells. We uncovered those buried cells because we felt that that was an important piece to
right.
it. And we've done some other work on the buildings. But that is our goal, is to keep that money. So people need to understand that, yes, we have the CVB money that comes from our lodging tax, but then we also have the MSP funds. And we keep those two separate.
Mm-hmm.
So that they don't overlap any. But our concerns is keeping the preservation and those buildings going on the site. We want to keep them as a historic site. When you look at other prisons across the country, a lot of them refer to them as museums. So they are the historic site. They're technically not really an attraction per se. If you want to, it's a historic attraction.
Right.
And we want to continue that. It's just like, you know, with the gas chamber, that's a huge historic piece to MSP, but we don't want to just throw it in everybody's face because some people don't like it. They
right.
have a difficulty of understanding that.
Right.
So putting the buildings in place, getting the windows sealed up is probably my biggest thing, that we got to keep the animals out of there. We got to keep the rain out of there so that we can continue to move forward. You know, we had put together a kind of business plan within our office as to what we thought needed to happen to each of the buildings and how can we, you know, is there a way to put in another entry so that we can move more people through there? Did we do it kind of as a self-guided tour down the road where if we don't have enough tour guides, we can also allow people to come in and do the headsets and recordings and that type of thing. So we had put together some of those items that we would like to see for the future.
Yeah.
And that's our goal, is to be able to keep it going and keep it as a historic site.
So what would be the next steps? I mean, what happened with the business plan?
We turned it over to OA, and so they do have that. But then we did go through this next step with PGAV and the JGWA group. And so now we're kind of waiting to see what happens with the governor's budget.
Okay.
And how to move forward.
Okay. So that would be the 2025 budget?
Yes.
Yeah.
So we did end up, the governor had added in some money for it that did not get put in the House budget. In working with Senator Bernsketter and Senator Huff, they did put in $15 million. So we will see now if that can carry over and how that can be used.
Okay.
Gary, I think that there's, and this goes back to the original MSP Redevelopment Commission. The material that was put together from these plans was actually put on paper with drawings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I know all the material I had in a big attache case, I turned over to the state archive because I didn't want it to go in a dumpster.
Right.
And it was always the contention of every one of the architects and the various groups, the business leaders of our city, and all those folks. It was always our thought there could be a good marriage of the old and the new at MSP.
Mm-hmm.
Even now, we know that there's some really valuable property over there. And there's no reason why the city and the state cannot continue to work together to put other projects over there that fit in. That's one thing I'll say, the state health lab that was built down there on Chestnut,
right,
on prison property. Well, I know for a fact that it was built the way it was built so that not only did it meet the necessary codes that you have to have for that kind of a building where you're handling all kinds of things,
mm-hmm,
but they also took into consideration the architecture of the old MSP. And that's why you see brick on that building.
Sure.
They did that on purpose. And so I hope that in the future, when we have the other new buildings that are being built, and I haven't seen the designs for those, but I hope that when that happens, that we keep that in mind, because you could certainly have a good marriage between the old and the new.
Yeah.
And it can all fit in together.
Sure.
And I hope that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I'd ask, as a former council member yourself, what are some of the challenges from the city standpoint, how to push this discussion along?
You know, the one thing that you always run into is that it's kind of like when you change administrations at any level.
Right.
You never know what the priorities of the next administration might be.
Now, right.
I know that present mayor is definitely a proponent for MSP in the future of MSP. And I know that, you know, some people were surprised when they said, okay, well, we're not going to have the conference center over at MSP now. It's going to be in a different location.
Right.
Well, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I mean, some circumstances alter cases. And that's a case where that happened. But that doesn't mean that you still can't have something over there at MSP that'll be just as grand.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll fit in. You know, if we were in a large metropolitan area, they would laugh at us if you said that MSP was a long ways from the town,
right,
the business district.
Yes.
You know, because I used to walk all the time from MSP to the Truman Building for meetings. You know, I didn't do it when it was zero, but
right,
I certainly did it when it was decent weather. So I can say that, yes, there are challenges. And I guess one of probably the biggest challenges, we all know, is here again, the financial component.
Yes.
You know, where do you get the money? And a lot of people think, well, you spend too much time doing studies and plans and all that. But we know you have to have those things
in right,
order for those components to come together and work. And I would hope that the present council, even though I've made it a point not to interfere with them and shouldn't, but I hope that there are people on there that still realize the significance and the value of MSP, and that we can have the old and the new brought together. And if people come forward, or the city or the Chamber of Commerce or whatever, find some component that would fit over there, there's room for that component to go over there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of room over there.
Absolutely. Well, and I think you make a good point, too, that the changing of administrations can complicate things,
yes,
you know,
yes,
can slow the progress down. And obviously, with gubernatorial election in November, there's going to be a new administration. Mm-hmm. So the state's role is going to change a bit, just as the cities did a couple of years ago. That certainly complicates the whole formula there.
Yeah, one example of that, just a small example, but I know that there were some people in in the present state government that probably should have had information passed on to them about the architectural charrette and these plans and all that existed that could potentially be used for MSP, but they had no knowledge that those even existed.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that's bad when somebody just says, okay, they walk away and get rid of that and pitch it in the dumpster or whatever. And
right.
That's kind of a not a very good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When we talk about the future of MSP, how would you characterize yourself as optimistic about its future or skeptical?
I am optimistic about it.
Okay.
I'm delighted that the city has come in and cleaned up a lot of the vegetation. That way, for developers to come in, can really truly see what the site is all about. Working with the state, I think we've gotten their attention of how important that site is. I think it's kind of a learning opportunity for us to educate some of the legislators about the site. I think, you know, when you talk about a decommissioned prison, some people go, oh my gosh, why would they? But we did have the opportunity to bring about 10 or 12 legislators over there this year. We had Mark on board with us to walk them through and show them the tour and show them what we actually share over there, the historical value of it. And I think we probably taught them, hey, it's not what you think it is.
Yeah,
there's bad stuff in here, but there's also some good things in here. It was a community. Many of the guides that worked over there as correction officers had relationships with these inmates.
Sure.
And continue to this day have relationships with them. So that's an important piece that sometimes doesn't get shared.
Yeah.
And it is our history. It can't be erased, good or the bad, but we got to be able to continue to share the history.
And I'm positive about it as well. You know, there are days when I just kind of shake my head and worry.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm still positive.
Yes.
Okay. Overall, and I think one of the things that helped to some degree is the state had some architects that came from New York and St. Louis. And we spent a lot of time with them, myself and some others. We spent a lot of time with those people, and they went over every inch of MSP. And then they came back to the state with reports, and then the city was involved in that, as were the state people. And so I'm pretty positive. Here again, it all goes back to priorities of what a new administration would prioritize, you know, because it takes money.
Yeah.
But I hope that we can get money, and you know, if you can't get what you ask for to begin with, then you take what you can get and you start with that, at least as a starting point.
Right.
And then you can always go back and say, okay, here's what we've done, and here's what's positive about this, and here's the next phase, and here's what we would like. You could help us with this.
Sure.
And that's how you build that, and I would hope that that's what happens. The Missouri State Penitentiary, the old prison, is not just something for the city of Jefferson. It's something that has impact on the history of our state and on national history as well.
Yeah.
So it fits into all those various components in those time periods, and that's why I think it's important that it be retained.
All right. Well said. So Mark and Diane, we'll put in our show notes clearly how, if you're interested in a tour, how one might enjoy that. Thank you for coming with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.